The dust slowly settling on the 2024 Men's Six Nations, we are now just over a year out from the British and Irish Lions Tour of Australia. And so we thought it would be fun for the Rugby Paper podcast to put together a 15 to get the win down under. Should be a good one, this. I've assembled the troops together at 8:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. Chewy's thrilled about it, to pick the Rugby Paper podcast current projected British and Irish Lions 23 to take on Australia, a resurgent Australia, as we were just saying, next summer. This is obviously, keep in mind that the tour is in well over a year. So, guys, let's get straight into it. We'll go
Actually, just before you go on, I just need to point out that in Lions selections of past, Mickey Steele Bodger would invite us to the East India Club for a five-course meal, followed by brandies. I mean, we wouldn't even think about picking the team until about 11 o'clock at night. And here we are, barely out of our beds, having to apply the grey matter to this serious task. So times have not improved over the years.
It just shows you what we've lost with the collapse of empire.
The good old days.
The good old days. I once managed to get into the East India Club without a tie, just to annoy Mickey Steele Bodger, who called me an effing heretic.
And then wrapped a tie around your neck.
I feel like that's a justified attack at me getting you guys out of bed at 8 a.m. So I apologize. I'll pay for your coffees. How about that? I can't afford a five-course meal. Well, we're definitely not staying on till 11 p.m. because my God. So let's get straight into it. I put together a list of names that I felt were genuinely in contention for a spot in that 23, and I have 64 names. So that shows how competitive it is. I'm not going to name all of them, of course, but this maybe is one of the hardest Lions squads to pick in recent memory. We'll jump straight in with the front row. I'll nail mine.
Easiest bit.
Yes, it is, actually.
Yeah. Fix itself.
I've gone all Ireland. Has everyone else gone all Ireland?
No.
Yes, I've gone all Ireland.
Yep, so have I.
Really? No. Porter Sheehan Furlong.
Yep. Yeah.
Moving on.
It would take injury or catastrophic loss of form for that to alter at the moment, I think.
Porter Sheehan Ferguson. I think Tyre's on the way down. Great though he's been. I think he's on the way down.
I think that he's come back from a pretty severe injury, and I don't think he's been at his best. But I think he's a proven he's a proven Lion, among other things. And I think he'll even not at his best, I still think he had a pretty good championship.
Yeah, and Ferguson
was in an awful lot of teams of Lions predictions, actually, directly after. I mean, the tight end of the tournament was Antonio, I suppose. I mean, a lot of people went for Antonio, who, as I understand it, is not available for the British and Irish Lions. I honestly think that Furlong is showing signs of decline, and I think Ferguson is pretty much at the peak of his game now.
Well, it's interesting because Ferguson's been a penalty machine, and this season he's corrected that to a degree. But I'm not convinced about him. I don't see him as an irresistible force. I do think he's improved, without a doubt. And I think he had a good season for Scotland. But I don't put him ahead of Furlong.
We'd all be an irresistible force against the Wallaby front, right?
I was going to say.
Don't say it too soon. I reckon that Bell, the guy that they've got on the loose head, is very, very good.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah. I mean, I'm putting down the All Irish front row then for our selection. In that case, apologies, Chewy. Do we know how old Furlong is? Because I mean, I do. I
63.
I was surprised. Obviously, he looks somewhat
he's
old.
The same age as Sinclair. They're both the same age. I think is he 30 or 31?
He's 30. Yeah, yeah. So he's despite
should be hitting his prime then.
The only rugby player to look older than him is Mako Vunipola, but he's only just in his 30s, so it's prime prop age, which I was a bit surprised about. All right, well, I mean, I think let's cherish that harmony, because I'm sure we're going to dissipate as we
gonna
get
fly apart.
Fine unit. But But I think that's nice and easy. Porter, Sheehan, Furlong. We'll get to the bench later. Second row, I've gone one England, one Ireland.
I have, but it might be a different Ireland, I suspect.
Okay. Have you gone Joe McCarthy?
Yeah, I've gone Mauro Itoje, first of all. I do think a little bit under the radar, he had a bloody good tournament, and he was even good when England were poor. And I think he's back, and I think we're going to see some major stuff from him in the next 2 or 3 months. And I think he's going to kick on. If you're picking it for tomorrow, the first test tomorrow, alongside him, I'll have it. 15 months' time, I think Joe McCarthy's going to just kick on, and be a beast. He already is a bit of a beast. So I would go with Itoje, McCarthy for 15 months' time.
I go with you on Itoje. I think, you know, that consistently he was top class during the Six Nations. I've gone with Martin alongside him, just because I think if you talk about a beast, he puts McCarthy in the shade at the moment, just in terms of physicality. And I think, you know, as ever, you're going to need that. Big time on a Lions tour, and the familiarity as well, but also the power that he'll put through scrummaging wise. So I go for him as the tractor lock.
Those are my four names that I was really, for the three, presumably there are three second row spots, unless you obviously put Martin at six. Those were the four names that I was sort of penciling in. Chewy, have you got any other names to contribute to that?
No, I don't. I mean, Itoje is nailed on, and I would certainly. I mean, I buy Bren's argument about whether you're playing tomorrow or next year. In fact, they are playing next year. Whether you want to, I mean, Itoje can do it all, as we know. But equally, he can play the tractor role or a sort of souped up tractor role as well as the next guy. So for the X factor, unless Byrne has a major, goes off a cliff in form, he's in my side, because I think he just does things that virtually no one else does.
I'd agree. He's in my side as well, but not in the second row.
Now it's getting complicated, Nick.
No, it's getting good.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, lads, the listeners are bored. We need to start disagreeing a bit more. All right. So, Nick, you've presumably got Byrne at six. I'm going to provisionally put... So, we've got Itoje as our four. Does anyone have Itoje as captain?
Haven't thought about captain yet. I'm going to pick the team. Well, captain, when we've got the team.
Okay, fine. All right. I've got my captain. It's not Itoje.
Okay.
And I'm going to put Byrne in the other slot, since I've got Byrne... Chris has got Byrne, and Nick, you've got Byrne at six. But go on, Nick, let's hear your back row as a unit then.
Well, look, I mean, I think that first, just to talk about the selection of Byrne at six, I mean, he's certainly somebody that I don't think you could leave out of the pack. I wouldn't, on the basis of what we've seen. We also know that there is such a thing as second season syndrome. So we'll see how McCarthy goes.
Yeah.
I thought he was quiet in the last two games. I choose Byrne because I think actually, as Chewy says, he does things that others don't. His ability to come onto the ball, to pick the right angle at the right time, is exceptional. He's a very, very good jackler or turnover merchant. The only area where I think sometimes he's not as good as the rest of his game is that people slip tackles sometimes. But overall, I think he's a very good footballer, sees the entire game, and for that reason, and he's mobile. I think he's mobile enough, and I actually think he's more mobile than Martin. Which is why,
and he gives you line out. He gives you line out.
He gives you line out too. So
and the reason he slips tackles, and you're dead right. But it's one of those things. I remember on the Lions tour, the famous Lions tour in '71, when Barry John's kicking was so unbelievably good that Fergie McCormack, the great All Black fullback, was dropped.
Yeah.
And the only reason that Fergie McCormack looked like he was making mistakes because he was such a brilliant reader of the game that he got far closer to John's kicking than your average fullback would have been. And I think that kind of syndrome affects Byrne. He gets into positions to make tackles, especially in quite exposed places where other second rows rarely turn up.
Absolutely. And he's always, and he's at full stretch when he misses them pretty well, you know.
Yeah, that's a good observation.
I'm just sort of going back. I'd like to go back to the front row. Just one thing that occurs to me is it's an area where the Lions selectors have often really made balls ups. You know, I mean, the failure to select Probyn in 93 was a major error. And it's incredibly important that even though Australia don't at the moment have much of a scrummaging reputation, that we take nothing for granted at all. And that the scrummages that you've got these days, the critical thing is you don't want somebody who sets the referee, because a lot of them are still struggling with the scrum, who sets the referee on edge. And that Irish front row has been consistently good for, you know, we're talking about 3 years now, pretty well. And they don't get on the wrong side of the referee too often, with the exception of Mr. Reynal, when he gave Ellis Genge about 8 penalties against Furlong at Twickenham 3 years ago, but and then had to apologise for it. So, I mean, that's one thing I wanted to add there. Do you want to move on to the rest of the back row?
Let's hear your whole back row.
I'd go for Caelan Doris at 8. And I would go for Ben Earl at open side. I think he just pips Van der Flyer for me at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's a it's a wide open battle. I'm not sure that number 8 is. If Doris, I don't think Doris again was really, he got through a hell of a lot of work, but I'm not sure that he was quite firing on every cylinder in the championship, but he's a class player. And again, he's got the full, the all court game in terms of he offers line out. He's pretty quick. He's got good hands and he reads the game extremely well. And Earl, well, I think, you know, we've all, you know, the plaudits have rained down for him and deservedly because he's been incredibly dynamic. I mean, he's a stocky man, but he's not a big man in terms of poundage in the modern game. But the degree to which he punches above his weight in contact is, you know, is extraordinary. It's helped by the fact that his footwork is so good.
Yeah.
He's very, very hard to deny at the moment. And I still believe that open side's his best position. But he gives you that option. If you want to break very, very fast from the back of a scrum and attacking scrum, he gives you that option.
Or he could
I think there's got to be a fair bit of consensus on this. I'd certainly have, if you're picking on this form, on the form of the Six Nations, Benel will be the number 8, with Doris slightly behind. But Doris has had, you know, he's been very consistent for 3 or 4 seasons now. And, you know, he's very good. I think he'll be a great 8. Earl will be a great 7. Yeah. 6, I'd put in a little shout for Ollie Chessam. I thought he showed up really well in the 2 games he started there at 6. Early days for him at 6, but he could, you know, in 15 months' time, be an absolute force of nature there and contest the issue with Byrne, which looks like the way we're going. And I wouldn't have any problem with either of those 2 selections. Always great to have a line out at 6, line out man, I think, to add the balance, just looks better.
It's interesting because so I had obviously both of you, Nick, you've gone Byrne at 6, Brennan, you've got gone Chessam at 6, have gone the enforcer at 6, the sort of Courtney Laws style that England are trying to find again and seemingly have succeeded in finding in Chessam in those last 2 games in the championship. I've gone, as per the last Lions tour in Australia in 2013, more of a diet. I've got Ben Earl at 6. so that you can fit it, because he's a guy who can wear any number in that back row. I don't think it matters. He's so good and so dynamic and so multifaceted that I think he can play any role.
So who have you got at seven?
I've got Van der Vleer at seven.
Okay. You see, I think he could play six, Van der Vleer. Okay. He's got that sort of South African look about him. He could play six or seven. Wouldn't matter which shirt he's got on, like Steph Dufour, you know?
Yeah.
The double open side thing can work, as we've seen. We saw in 2019 with England.
Yeah. I wouldn't be doing it. If it was South Africa, I wouldn't be doing that. I'd be doing what you guys were doing. But I think...
Yeah.
Given the opposition, I think it can work.
Intrinsically, I like a what I'd call a sort of classic balance, traditional balance in the back row. But it can, you know, I mean, it can work. And you're right, it does depend on the opposition. I just wouldn't read, you know, I just wouldn't read, you know, it's almost as if we dismiss the opposition. And in a Lions tour, it's probably right that you go for what is your gun team. But the assumption that just because it's relatively fast tracks in Australia means that you know, the line out is such a significant source that to have two flankers under, or knocking around 6 foot in your back row, I think gives the opposition an opportunity.
I think that's a very fair point. Chewy, we're seemingly at a little bit of an impasse. Can you help?
For good reasons, I find this an incredibly difficult area to decide to select.
Yeah.
I don't quite buy the. I see where Brent's coming from with Chesson, but I'm not quite sure that playing at Lions pitch in what might still be an unfamiliar position, because you may not play a fat lot of rugby there. If let's say Cunningham South makes his full recovery relatively quickly and gets a run against the All Blacks in the summer and what have you. I mean, I think he'll be a contender, Cunningham South, for sure. I can see him having a big year, but it's supposition at the moment because we haven't seen it, have we? But the suspicion is that he's going to be a real coming force. And he's again a bit like Byrne and Itoje. He's one of those forwards that appears already to have the full skill set. It's just when he brings everything to the fore and what specific role he's asked to play. So I think he's a runner. It may well be that Earl stays at number eight. It's perfectly possible that England will continue to pick him at eight on the basis of if it ain't broke, etc., etc. So in that case, if he's not playing vast amounts of rugby, and Saracens might do something similar now that Billy V is pushing off, he might well play at eight because they've got people like Andy Christie hanging around at Saracens, and they may think that Ben Earl suits their needs best at number eight.
And McFarlane, who they could put at six.
Well, yeah. Crikey, I wish he was available for the Lions.
I mean, that's a back row and a half, isn't it?
He's not the worst, but there are two of them. I mean, seven. If we say that Earl is at eight, and we can argue about the sixes, whether you want to take Byrne out of the second row and stick him there, or whether you think that Cunningham South's got a load to offer. The one bloke, I mean, I think Rory Darge is a very, very good player, a real dog of a seven. Tommy Raphael in terrible adversity in the Six Nations was like a whole kennel full of dogs. I mean, crikey.
Wainwright, it is.
Well, there's Aaron Wainwright, who can play six or eight with equal facility. And the bloke we haven't mentioned, because he hasn't been playing, is Jack Morgan.
Yeah. I was just
I can see Jack Morgan in a Lions shirt very easily indeed.
Me too. He's definitely got to be in the tour party.
Yeah.
It's just very difficult at this juncture. But on what we've seen of him, he'd be pushing for a test place.
He would be pushing for a test place. And that might well be, I mean, he can play six or seven, I think, can't he? I mean, I know he played.
Yeah. But you're the one thing that I see about all this is that you're still, if you're talking about Ben Earl at eight, and you're talking about Jack Morgan, and you're talking about Van der Vleer, you've got three exceptional players, all of 6 foot.
Yeah, you need one tall guy, I think.
Yeah,
which is why I think that that Cunningham South is a definite runner at the six. Little though we've seen of him, and to be honest with you, you know, Lions history is full of bolters.
Yeah, I've been Roger Utley being one of them in 74. But I'm very much impressed by Cunningham South and have advocated him in England terms. I think that he and Chesham are still very much works in progress.
No, indeed.
You know, Chesham was not very visible against Scotland. I mean, when he's at his best, and he was very good both against Ireland and against France, you can see what you could get there. But I don't think he's there yet. I think these guys, you know, maybe they make the tour party, but he's not in contention for a test spot for me at the moment. And neither Cunningham South or Chesham, because we haven't seen enough of them at test level.
Well, I'll give you Burnett blindside if you give me Jack Morgan.
What, to go straight into the?
Well, if you have Jack Morgan, that means Earl will have to go eight, and you don't pick Doris.
Don't pick Doris.
You know, there's a bit of a
Ruben. I agree with you.
Doris wasn't the eight of the championship.
No, he wasn't. But if you took the last four years, he's the best eight.
No, he's very good. He's an exceptional player.
Well, yeah. I'll try and make it a bit easier. The two names we've heard more than once there, or more than twice actually, Earl and Doris. So I think both of them should be in our back row, to be honest. And by extension, then you put Earl at seven and Doris at eight. And I know Earl was the best eight in the championship, but Doris has arguably been probably behind. Well, he's been rivaling Artie Surveyor for the best eight in the world for the last 18 months or so. Mm. And I think by extension, you get both of them in your back row. Six, we've got, you've picked Burn, Nick. Chris has picked Cunningham South. Bren has picked Chesham.
I'm happy to go with Burn or Chesham. So I can be the movable feast here. I'm happy to go with either Burn or Chesham.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking, right, let's go Burn at six. And second row, we've got Itoje and Chris, you mentioned Martin.
No, I didn't mention Martin.
Nick mentioned Martin. God, I'm completely lost now. Brendan, you mentioned McCarthy.
Yeah.
I think, Chris, you support McCarthy?
I'm not really sure. Between McCarthy and Moore, if we're talking McCarthy or Martin, because Burns now in the back row, I want a looser second row. I'm going to ask Marrow to do a lot of grind, because I think at close quarters he's eminently capable of doing it. I mean, the bloke does it all. I mean, fair play to the guy. So I quite like the idea of that. That's why I have Burn as a lock. Because he's that looser guy. It's the old yin and yang, isn't it, in the second row? But Itoje can do that. So if you're just going to have a complete tractor, then at the moment I would go McCarthy just above of Martin. I think McCarthy shows signs of having slightly more to his game, even though he's being a tractor.
Okay,
slightly more.
I'll tell you what. I mean, in the second row thing. I mean, again, we've put a number of names into the back row mix, you know, like Raffel, like Jack Morgan, and so on. At lock, you know, the last sort of non-Lions tour, which was to South Africa, obviously, Adam Beard got in there, and actually he did quite well, and. I mean, when you've got somebody like Skelton, I know that they're not going to get him off the ground, but he's going to lift other people into the stratosphere. So I do think, you know, sometimes you need you know, you need to look at line-out men. Both of the Greys were out of this Six Nations, but I don't know whether I'm right that they've both been Lions. Certainly Richie Grey has been.
I don't think Johnny has ever been.
No. But look,
he's been unlucky, really, really unlucky.
And Gilchrist has been a regular for Scotland.
David Jenkins would be your beard figure.
Yeah, possibly.
And he's very. I mean, I buy your argument. Jeff Parling in 2013 was a big player on that tour.
Yeah, he was. He became important. That's true.
He did. Yeah.
So look, I mean, that's just throwing a spanner in the works, because I actually think that we've got probably the right people, but there are options. You know, there always are with the Lions, and they're worth consideration for certain, and they'll get consideration in the wider tour party.
Well, I think that's a degree of consensus. So we've got no Welsh starters in that pack, which was something that did occur to me. And I think that leaves us looking, given how Wales's backline fired during the Six Nations, that leaves a Welsh starter looking unlikely at this point.
Well, you won't have any of the backline either.
No, well, that's what I'm saying.
But he might get in his physio.
Look, I don't think, I mean, listen.
Jack Morgan and David Jenkins won't be far. They'll definitely be on the tour. Yeah.
In a wider Lions tour party, there will be Welsh players in it.
Of course, of course.
But I don't think that we should, you know, I mean, there have been occasions where people have had no, in the past, where people have had no representation in a
Scotland for donkey issues.
And, you know, so for me, that's just the way the cookie crumbles at the moment.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So we've got Porter, Sheehan, Furlong, Itoje, McCarthy, Byrne, Earl, Doris. It's a pretty good pack.
That's a pretty decent pack.
If everyone's happy with that, does anyone massively object? If not, we'll move on to scrum half.
No. I still think you're wrong at tight end.
Yeah, and I still think you're wrong at lock, but there we go.
I agree with you in the end, you half-wit.
I didn't say you particularly. I said you collectively.
Steady on, Chewy.
The royal you.
Yeah. God, that's the first time halfway it's been used on this podcast.
Hey, I promise you it won't be the last.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
We've had worse than half-wit, though.
Yeah, no wit. He's just fucked.
Yeah. Right, scrum half. I've gone Jameson Gibson-Park.
Yes, I agree.
Chewy?
Well, this all comes down to the game we're trying to play.
Yes, and so does fly half. Also does.
Massively. Yeah, I mean, you're now into what kind of shape you're trying to put on the game. So I think Gibson Park's exceptional, absolutely exceptional. But I also think that this brings into the equation who you pick at 10, because that partnership is obviously fundamental. Whether Gibson Park, I don't see that Gibson Park has too many too many failings. Actually, at the moment, picking on form at the moment, he is a tempo setter, much as Alex Mitchell is a tempo setter.
I was going to say, Chris, when you talk about depends what type of game you want to play. I was going to say to you, what type of game can't Gibson Park play?
Well, he is exceptional. He is exceptional at the moment. I think, as you know, I've got many, many good things to say about Alex Mitchell, but I think it would be peculiar not to say that Jameson Gibson-Park is not the best scrum half.
Yeah, I mean,
at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, what we've got is there have been periods where England have dominated Lions selections, Wales have dominated Lions selections, not too many. The Irish usually get a fair contingent, but they don't often completely dominate it. I'm afraid that this time round, we have to look at the reality of what's happened in European rugby over the last 3 years. And the reality is that Ireland are, by some distance, the best team in the Six Nations on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
And therefore, this time round is their time, almost. And, you know, for me, it's Gibson Park. without a shadow of a doubt. You know,
And I think it's very useful that Mitchell is of the same ilk, so that they're kind of interchangeable. If Mitchell had to come in, you won't get a change of game plan at all.
Yeah, and likewise, probably with Thomas Williams as well. You know, there's a very, very good, and White. I like White. You know, he's a good, very good all rounder. So yeah, they've got strength at scrum half. I think
they do have that.
Yeah.
But so we're unanimously saying Gibson Park.
It's difficult to make a case for anybody else as starter at the moment.
Yeah. All right. Fly half. Now there is it. That's a bigger domino and a bigger debate. Has anyone gone Owen Farrell?
No.
No, I haven't.
No. Okay. Who's gone Finn Russell?
I have.
Anyone else? I've gone Finn Russell as well.
I'm sitting on the fence. I'm going to. Listen to the debate and make my call.
Okay.
I think it's 50-50 for various reasons between Crowley and Russell.
Yeah. Obviously, it depends how Crowley goes in the next year. He obviously faded a little bit in the championship.
He had four good matches on a debut season, and of course, he's going to be playing with Gibson Park for the next. You know, so that's an established combination that has to come into the equation somewhere.
It's a recently established combination. Look, I'm not.
Yeah, but he's going to be playing the next 15 months with him, pretty much.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, I don't think that with players of this quality, I'm not sure that that it's. Look, it's important, very important, but I'm not sure that it should be the critical factor. The critical factor is the best man. The man who's most likely to fire the Lions towards success.
Well, that's an interesting. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I would say in the last 12 months, Crowley has taken Munster to URC success and been number 10 when Ireland won the championship. Now, I love Finn Russell, but he's done none of that.
Yeah, I love Finn. I like Finn Smith, who got the better of him when when Northampton played Munster.
Well, he got the better of Munster. I mean, I'm not sure.
Listen, I mean, in the comparison between the two, he had the better game for me. But
I love Finn Smith,
not by a street, but edged it. So, look, I mean, he's definitely there in and around the 23 for me, but he's a one season man at the moment. And Russell is for me, I mean, he's been there. He's done it. I mean, they would, my view is that the no show, no crowds test series in South Africa, if he'd been fit, they wouldn't have played in the way in which they did, which was a sort of clone of South Africa's kick chase game. Yeah. And they would have won the series. His arrival for the third test showed what the possibilities were. So I'd go with him. He's a form player, and he's the ability. I mean, I agree. Crowley had a very, very good debut season, but Russell's ability to unlock defenses is, you'd say before the last two games of George Ford is unrivaled, but he's got a rival there in some respects, but he just has that ability to flick the switch and to find the moment.
Poor old George hasn't had a mention. Unbelievable.
I've just mentioned him.
Well, you did. But yeah, sort of not so much in passing as in a sort of passing wind. It's
you're about to do a lot more of that.
I mean, George. I buy it. I mean, I think on balance, I'd go Russell. I think it's the bold choice. I think it's the adventurous choice. I think it's the statement choice. I'm not sure how interested Andy Farrell is in any of those things, really. I mean, he's a pretty not narrow-minded, but narrow-eyed, very, very focused, sort of ruthless strategist. And if he thinks that a big kicking game against the Wallabies and plain territory is going to win you a test series, then that's what they'll do. And he'll have a lot of advice to that end, I would think. And Finn can be random, as we know. I think he also plays, I think Russell also plays better with an inside centre who has a much bigger range than some inside centres that we'll be talking about in a minute. I think his partnership with Redpath at Bath, for instance, where you've got a, basically a second 10 playing alongside him, opens up all sorts of attacking possibilities. And while Tuipulotu is not quite that kind of second 12, second 10, he does do an awful lot of different things. So I've just moved the conversation on into a completely different position. I think it's difficult to look past Russell because on a good day, complete box office match winning, imaginative, inventive, all those things. And yes, I mean, the romantic in me wants to see him play in the Lions series and play the house down. So I go Russell.
And just quickly on the Owen Farrell thing, I don't know exactly where we are with that, but remember he stepped out of Test rugby before, long, quite a few months before he decided to go to France. So it was his decision to test, you know, to step back from England, retire from Test rugby for a minimum of 2 years, I think was what he was saying. And also, if it goes well with Racing next year, they won't finish until June the 29th or June the 30th. They'll be in the French Cup final. And I can't remember the exact dates of the tour, but he would miss, even if he was in consideration, he would miss a considerable chunk of the build up and the early part of the tour, which is a very short tour anyway. So I'm not even sure it's practical. So I think at the moment, although there is obviously the father son connection and he's playing very well again, I think it's pretty unlikely at the moment that he comes into consideration unless something, unless there's a sea change somewhere.
Brent, do you know when they actually when they're scheduled to meet and leave?
I haven't got that, no. I mean, but they'll certainly be well into the series by the end of June, which is when the French Cup final is.
Right. Okay. So he either doesn't play.
Well, he'd have to come to an arrangement. And I mean, Racing haven't bought him
No, sure.
Not to play in the cup final.
for him to go away for the playoffs, have they, you know?
Yeah, but we're getting, you know, where are they in the table at the moment? Mid-table?
Yeah, no, we were talking next season, obviously,
Yeah,
not this
sure.
season. But yeah, I mean, Racing have put in a squad together that should be at the sharp end next season,
Yeah.
you know. That's why they're spending the money.
Yeah, but it's the French top 14, so
Of course, of course. I mean, he might be available. Yeah, they might bomb. You know, they might
yeah.
be
Look,
done by
I mean,
the
I think that the Andy Farrell thing, you know,
end of May.
almost what he's likely to do is a separate thing. This is what we're, you know, what we think's the best side, and you know, obviously the game that they play is significant. I think that Owen Farrell, I think for the reasons that you point out, Brent, that Owen Farrell's place on this tour is very, very much in question. You know, I mean, he's, you know, from what we saw at the weekend, he's certainly good enough to be in consideration. There's no question about that. But he's removed himself from Test rugby, and that is a very important consideration. You know, because I don't think that the game between Saracens and Quins was anything close to the rugby that we saw in the Six Nations. So you know, I've got really big question marks about you know how that one goes forward. The other thing is that I think that one proviso I'd like to put in there, if Owen does find his way into the Test party, is that he doesn't play at inside centre.
Which is where, of course, he was playing the last time England got to the World Cup final. But I'd rather leave that there. It's
And what happened in that game?
well, yeah, but they did comfortably beat the All Blacks in the game before.
Yeah. And
But I'm just saying that one thing does occur to me with the selection of Russell. How does he fit in? Assuming that Andy Farrell is going to use what Ireland do as a blueprint, albeit a broad blueprint of how they're going to approach this particular tour. You don't see people doing a lot out of the box in the Ireland context. We've repeatedly said on this podcast, the thing about Ireland, one of their massive strengths is they're all on the same page. They all know where we're going. They know the game plan or the strategy or the basic shape of the game. Yes, you do things within that broad plan. But Finn Russell at his best does things that are so off. so off book that I'm not sure that Andy Farrell, with the way he has approached the Ireland job wildly successfully, will be comfortable with him.
I think that's a good point. I mean, but that's almost always what, you know, one of the few reasons you think twice about picking Finn Russell, isn't it? You know, he does what he does completely all the time, and most of the time is brilliant, but you can still do what he does and be brilliant, and it doesn't actually fit into what the team is wanting at that given time.
I think that he's, you know, I mean, I think that he's got a label, and you know, it was merited. He was a maverick. Fell out with Gregor Townsend big time over it, even though Townsend
was a maverick himself.
Yeah,
it takes one to know one.
and then you know what I see is a bloke whose game has matured. You know, I mean, and he was talking yesterday about, you know, the full armory, if you like, you know, when to kick, when to, you know, when to run, so on and so forth. And I think he's much more judicious in that sense than
his range of passing yesterday, including the forward ones, was very imaginative.
And it always has been.
But I'm not sure in a Lions test match, Andy Farrell will be wanting to see the pass to nowhere, which he did in the second half, which is, let's see where it lands. Mm. Let's see where it lands. Just a long pass into space.
Yeah.
To see where it lands. And all I'm saying is that if Andy Farrell says, Finn, we don't want to see any passes to nowhere against a Wallaby side that if they can do nothing else, they'll be able to run back from deep. He might, being Finn, say, I think I'll play it the way I see it, Andy. At which point, you have a massive falling out.
Yeah, and then you've presumably got a fly half that he can go to who'll do what he wants.
What?
Like Jack Crowley. Or maybe George Ford, you know. So there it goes. It'll be one of the stories of the tour if that's what happens. But we'll see, you know. I mean, I'd still back Russell's horse in this one.
I'm with you. I want to see him in the, just for fascination's sake, I want to see him in a big time Lions
environment,
win or bust environment, because he ain't going to get there in the end with Scotland, is he?
No,
he's not going to get to the back end of a World Cup. And as things stand, we're not going to see Finn Russell in a World Cup semi final where it's all on the line, and
famous last words.
It's
the 27 World Cup.
It's change of underwear circumstances. But I'm not sure we're going to see that, and which would be a great shame. I mean that's like George Best not going to a World Cup at all. Mm. You know, I would love to see him tested in the real molten heat of a Lions Test series, which is why I hope the Wallabies are a lot better than they have been. I hope they're a lot better than they were in 2013. Because you want to see that test. You want it all out there. And I would love to see Finn Russell in those circumstances, because I want to see how he reacts. He's a fascinating rugby player.
I'm happy to row in behind you with that one, boys. You just about won me over. I want Crowley on the bench. You need somebody who plays the Ireland way to come on if it does go pear-shaped and there's two intercept passes in the first half from Finn and he's having one of those days. So I'd want Crowley close at hand.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, we're putting Russell at 10. I think one thing
do you think just in this context, do you think that Finn Russell in the sort of coaching imagination, do you think there's a parallel with sort of Quade Cooper? Do you think coaches look at him and say, hell of a player? Does things I've never seen before. However, some of those things I never want to see again.
It's not a bad parallel, actually.
Yeah, I think he's...
Because Quade never nailed it, did he? Selection-wise, Quade never quite nailed it down.
But I think Quade was more flaky than Russell. I think that Russell, if you look at Russell's defensive game, he's actually pretty sound. You know, he's good. Quade Cooper, no.
I think Quade was also in and out of the Australia team more. Obviously, Finn Russell had his bust up with Gregor, but Finn Russell is Scotland's starting 10 now and has been for 18 months ever since that bust up. And I think Wade Cooper, the longest run of Australia was a
about
year, maybe a season. Yeah, well,
yeah.
And Russell's earned it. I mean, he's earned that positional security in the Scotland setup.
He's also a much better goal kicker than Wade Cooper. Much better.
Well, he is now. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Can't miss, can he?
No. One thing I did want, and I'm aware we need to move on, but do we think in terms of picking your fly half and therefore picking the brand of rugby you're going to play? Because like we say, Russell offers just a completely different brand to your Crowleys and your Fords and your Farrells. The sort of ghosts of 2021 are echoing a little bit in that obviously 2021 was a pretty poor tour to watch and the Lions played a pretty drab brand of rugby. Do we think in terms of getting a bit in the England mold of their sort of discourse during the Six Nations, do we think getting a bit of support behind the Lions and the brand they want to play?
Yeah, very much. The Lions need a relaunch. I mean, that 21 tour in very difficult circumstances was almost a non-event. I mean, I've never been so disappointed in a rugby occasion.
Well, what people don't know is there was no COVID in South Africa. It's just that no one turned up.
And they made the
so run. I think the Lions in these difficult times, and they've already been shortened to 8 matches, is it? They need a rip-roaring, packed houses, champagne rugby.
It's a 97 moment.
Champagne rugby of whatever description you consider champagne rugby to be, but it needs to be special. And, you know, certainly Finn Russell at his best will bring some of that.
Finn Russell's our 10. I think we've sort of arrived there eventually. So let's go. Should we go midfield next and sort of continue that unit? I struggled with this one, I got to say. Bundy Aki is obviously the form 12. Chewy, judging by what you were saying earlier, you're not going with Bundy Aki. He's also going to be 35 when they go to Australia.
I mean, I think it's really, I think that's really difficult. I mean, this is the eternal question, isn't it? What do you want from your 12? Sadly, Jordy Barrett is unavailable. So, I have a preference for someone who's not a banger-upper. I want somebody to give, or at least, if you're going to have a banger-upper at 12, then I want someone at 13 with a big range of skills, including the kicking game. I think that's really important. And, you know, England have it with Slade there. I'm not sure that Slade will be on very high on too many people's lists for a Lions test spot. I might be wrong because I've never been able to second guess you lot because you're all weird. But I can see reasons to pick Aki. Of course, do you pick the Scottish midfield if you're going to play Russell? As a bunch, well, there's not much of a kicking game outside Russell there. And I can see Nick already shaking his head and he probably thinks it's a bit lightweight. If we're going to play Aki, I would quite like to see, I think, and this is another of my punts in the dark, I'd quite like to see Tommy Freeman at 13.
Yeah, he came into my mind as well. I think we've obviously said he'd make a great test 13. And I've got Tommy Freeman as my number 23 because I think he could come off the bench and obviously cover midfield and cover backfield as well.
Oh, but absolutely. He's in the 23 for sure. I don't see anyone else who gives you those possibilities.
Yeah. So, sorry, it cut out for me. I think it might have been fine for you guys. But Chewy, who were your 12? Who was your 12?
At the right at the moment, based on current form, Aki, because I don't see anyone playing 12 at the moment that has the range of the kind of skills that my ideal 12 would have.
Yeah.
So I'm going Aki and Freeman.
Okay, that's an interesting midfield unit. I've forgotten what I've gone now. I've gone Aki and Jones, personally. I know Jones is a slightly left-field pick and maybe question marks about his defence, but I think his with Finn Russell, I think especially the way that those two can gel, and we spoke about passes to nowhere, Chris, that pass to nowhere at Twickenham in 2018 or whenever it was to Jones obviously sticks long in the memory. So
well, that was a pass to Jones.
It was actually. He knew exactly what he was doing with that pass.
Do we know that though?
I've
always thought he does. But that was an absolutely precise pass in my
opinion. That's one of the best passes I've ever seen. That's right up there with Hernandez in the 2007 World Cup in that third place playoff.
I'm surprised you don't think it was forwards, Chris.
Well, I like to think I know what a forward pass is, and that wasn't. What was yesterday. But that's going back on Premiership lunacy.
I don't think it was a forward. The one at Twickenham wasn't a forward pass. I think it was that. That was the definition of a flat pass.
Yeah.
That was a flat pass.
I mean, the ball ended further forwards than when Russell threw it, but that is, it's such a big pass, I think, that that's where the sort of...
If it did, it was 6 inches. And okay, and I'm a pedant, but it was...
Are we talking about the pass at Murrayfield in 2018?
Oh, maybe.
Sorry, Michael, the pass of the century, yeah. 2018.
Yeah, that was a great, absolutely great pass. I mean, the difference is that the pass to nowhere yesterday bounced about three times. It landed in his hands.
Anyway, sorry about that digression. Has anyone not got Aki at 12?
I've
definitely got him, and I think he's going to be 35. I don't think he's going to get through to the World Cup, but I think Lions will be his big target.
Swansong.
If he can get to the Lions and have a storming series there, that will be a career swan song, I think. And that will keep him fit and motivated.
Is he 34 now?
I think he'd be 35 when the tour is on next summer. Yeah.
I think he's 33 now, but I might
he's
be wrong.
33 now, but I think he's got a May birthday or something, so he will be... He's got two birthdays in between now and the Lions.
Okay. Well, look, I mean, the thing that strikes me about him is that when they first brought him over from New Zealand, he was a bit of a prodigy, wasn't he? You know, and he could do, you know, his ball handling was as significant as his physical prowess. And it sort of seems to me that that aspect of his game, he became a bit of a banger, but he's always retained it. And we've seen it as, you know, the longer he's had in the side, the more influence he's had. And you see that some of his offloading game is very, very good. And ability, again, to find gaps and the power to get through them. I mean, he's been, I think without doubt, you know, Tuipulotu's had his moments as well. But without a doubt for me, he was the inside centre of the championship.
Mm. He's the Harrods to an Angie.
Also,
he's behind you.
There's a name
he
we
keeps
haven't
fit. He stays on the park.
Chewy, I'm surprised Tuilagi's not your 12, mate.
Well, tragically, he'll be unavailable because Bayern. I'm actually going to invest all my life savings in Bayern to make sure that they get to the top 14 final, so that he can't go on the Lions tour.
Okay, Aki at 12. Chewy, you've gone Freeman at 13. I've got Hugh Jones. Has anyone gone for the heavyweight Aki Lawrence axis, which would be quite destructive?
Yeah, I have.
Well, no, I have, because I don't consider Lawrence heavyweight. He's a 13. He's not a 12. And he's a very skillful player.
He's 105 kilos. That is still a
big... He's light on his feet. He's not a banger. And he's got passing. He's got offloads. He's actually got a kicking game, would you believe? So I don't think that's a heavyweight centre partnership at all. That's the logical centre pairing from what we've seen over the last 12 months.
I am fascinated then to hear your guys' wingers, because if you've gone with my wingers, that is an incredibly heavy... All right, heavyweight versus heavy, but in terms of poundage, it is a heavy, heavy back line.
I'm like Bren. I don't see Ollie Lawrence as being a real... you know, he's more of a pinball than a, you know, than a basher. And
yeah, that's fair.
I think that he's, you know, if he continues the upward trajectory that he's on, he looks fit. He looks fitter than he obviously had a lot of injuries at Worcester, but he looks fitter at Bath this season than he has possibly ever in his career. And I think that you know, he offers a hell of a lot. He's quite... The only thing I noticed yesterday is that he gives away quite a lot of penalties. really unnecessary ones. And there are aspects of his game that he needs to improve, like every, you say that about every player, but he does offer a real dynamism, and he's also such a natural footballer, so he's a very good foil for Aki, and he does have, he does have physicality as well.
I mean,
so
the prospect of him working off Aki is quite exciting. You have that extra yard, and he can use that gas a little bit more. And he knows when to pass as well. So, I'd be quite excited at that at midfield.
I mean, we're going with Lawrence at 13 then, because Chewy and I have been outvoted. So I only say heavyweight because you've then got, what's that? That's a nearly 220 kilo centre combination, which is probably the heaviest. I mean, that's Davis and Roberts, I suppose.
I'll tell you what, you when you come up with this 105 kg for Lawrence,
he doesn't look it, does he?
There are lots of stats that are right off, in la la land for me. I mean, I don't believe a lot of them. I think that there's a lot of kidology goes on. I think that sometimes somebody else has got a foot on the scales or something like that. So I'm sort of a little bit wary of that.
No, to be fair, looking it up now, it says 100, which, to be fair, is, I mean, a lot of
that might be,
that's lighter than Tommy Freeman. Obviously, he's not quite as tall.
Yeah,
and I've had to guess the Aussie midfield might weigh in at a fair old tonnage as
Yeah. Well, back in the day, well, not back in the day, but a few years ago, they were going Karevi at 12, Kurudrani at 13.
Yeah, I mean, those days are gone, but they'll have some big unit there.
Yeah,
at least one.
The last time they were any good, they had Matt Gitto at 12. No, that's true.
No, I mean, you're not wrong. You are
that's
not true.
Kurudrani at 13, that's absolutely fine. If you're going to have a footballer at 12, I'm with Ollie Lawrence all day at 13. All day.
So you're violently against Aki at 12, Lawrence at 13 then?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, look. I think I'm not as reluctant to see Lawrence at 12 as some other people on this panel. I think he can play it perfectly, perfectly adequate. I mean, he's shown in international rugby that he's turned in some pretty damn good performances at inside centre. I don't have a massive issue, and because he has a slightly bigger range than some than a pure basher. In fact, he has a much bigger range than a pure basher. I might venture to suggest that he ends up at 12 full time. It may well be. Who knows? That depends on the coach. I have no problem with Lawrence. I mean, he's very good. I just want, especially with someone like Russell at 10, I just want someone who can play the game managing role as well. I want someone else on the field who can do that.
Gibson Park is another game manager.
Well, Gibson Park in that position. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the kind of footballer you want to see, or I want to see, and when he got on the field at the weekend at Tottenham Stadium, Alex Goode wasn't on the pitch for very long, but he threw two or three passes and cut two or three lines in the space of. I know it was a busted game. It was all over. He could pretty much do what he wanted. But I just find so much selection very prescriptive. I want to see rugby, real rugby brain out there.
Yeah, he's a great player. And then you also look at a guy like Malins, who's just come back for Bristol. I mean, there are some very, very good players who aren't getting... aren't getting near tessellation.
Oh, and the more I think back, and I used to have this argument all the time, and I admired Mike Brain. I admired a hell of a lot about him. But how the hell he got that many England caps above a player, a rugby player as complete as Alex Goode is beyond me. Utterly beyond me.
High ball game. That's why.
Yeah, and that's a myth as well. He dropped one bomb under the post in Dublin on a shitty afternoon. And got hounded for it. And it was 3 years before I saw him drop another one. And 3 years before I saw him drop another one. He's nowhere near as fallible under the high ball as anybody made out. Oh. He just so much so that when he did drop one, it got noticed. Whereas Mike Brown would drop one every game. And it was, oh, that's unusual. Mike Brown's dropped a ball. he dropped the ball every game. He was also brilliant under the high ball for the rest of the 79 minutes. So I was absolutely gobsmacked that Goo hasn't got 90-100 caps. And it's a bit of a, well, it shames English game a bit that
it's
a talent
an, it's
like
an
that
indictment of the game. It is an indictment.
It's an indictment of England over the last 15 years almost.
There's a digression. Alex, good for the Lions.
Yeah. I was going to say, we'll put him at fullback. I was just about
inside centre. There you go.
England's answer to Geordie Barrett. So we've got Aki and Lawrence. I'm going to fast track the fullback discussion and preempt that we've all got Keenan.
We have. I have anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's.
Although isn't it interesting how I feel sorry for the bloke. Brendan has given him a mention actually over the last couple of weeks in passing, but no one's talking about Freddie Stewart, who 6 months ago would probably have been in a lot of Lions starting Test 15s.
Yeah, well, I hope he gets into the tour party.
He's in my touring party for sure. I think even if he's not an England starter, just having he obviously offers something to the tour that no one else in the British Isles does. And I think you've got to take him. And he was in contention to be on the bench for me. Just as a depend if say you. The Lions win the first test and you'd be going into the second or something like that. But no, I agree. I think we should give him a mention, but Keenan's...
And this is where the short tour kicks in and the restrictions to the short tour. Because back in 01, Nick might have his own views on this, because I think we've probably spoken about this before, but back in 01, Ian Balshall was hot favourite for the test team.
Yeah.
Against the Wallabies, and he didn't get picked for any of them. Matt Perry. And it was nothing to do with injury. Nothing to do at all, but the security that Perry brought defensively and all the stuff that he did, the one thing he couldn't do was run fast. Matt, I think he would accept that himself. He certainly wasn't as quick as Balshall, but he was better at everything else. And over the stretch of those pre-test series matches, Matt actually proved that to the satisfaction of Henry, who was coaching that tour, and he started all three tests.
Yeah.
So that's just this is what can happen with someone like Stewart, actually.
Listen, my admiration for Matt Perry's, you know, very high, but the Balshall, basically, he didn't get stitched up, but he was asked to play a game by Henry that was alien to him, and that's why it didn't work for him. And it did work for Matt. He got his opportunity and he seized it.
Which might go back to the Finn Russell question. Yeah. Will Finn Russell be asked to do something that he doesn't want to do?
We know that this is the story of Lions tours. You know, they actually getting the harmony right and getting all the gears to mesh is the critical thing. Anyway, we're in agreement on fullback.
We are. Yeah. I think wingers will be less in agreement. Who's got Doohan van der Merwe?
I've got him down as one, yeah.
I have.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll put him in. I think the other wing is a tricky one, because if you've got James Lowe, then...
You've got two left wings.
Yeah.
Do you really think that is... it's a critical thing regarding Lowe, because of is he a left footer?
Yeah, he's left peg, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know his religion at all.
he's a left footer, but I think that Matt van der Merwe can play on either wing. You know, I mean, the idea that you know you're just stuck on one wing. These guys are popping up all over the bloody field.
Well, that is certainly something you say on van der Merwe, who does get off his wing an awful lot.
Yeah.
I do think that defensively, There is a distinction to me between the two positions, but that doesn't mean to say that the top end wings can't adapt.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I remember David Trick back in the day being picked on the wrong wing by England in Dublin.
Yeah,
and Ollie Campbell made a complete ass of him
mm.
with his kicking, and David was just not spatially sort of acquainted with the demands of that position. So things have changed because wings go looking for work and they roam out of a lot more than they once did. So I've nothing against it. I think Van der Merwe is an absolute must. I'm just interested to know. I have my own ideas on the other wing, but.
Yeah, well, let's hear those. I mean, I have gone James Lowe on the other wing. But my only sort of reservation with that was I had a slightly quicker midfield. And I know Lawrence isn't slow, but obviously there are no out and out speed merchants in the sort of Emmanuel Feyenoord-Wabosso or obviously Lewis Rees-Sammet from 2021.
I think Van der Merwe is fairly nifty, isn't he?
He's nifty, yes, but I think he'd lose a foot race against your quickest British wingers for sure. But let's hear your Chewy. Let's hear your other winger then.
Oh well, I put down Feyenoord-Wabosso.
I thought you might. Anyone else?
Well, do you know what? I've got him and Lowe bracketed, but. I mean, look, Lowe had a hell of a season. It's very, very difficult to leave out a bloke who hardly put a foot wrong out of the equation. Feyenoord-Wabosso, from the little we've seen of him, is to the manor born. I mean, he does bring something different. There's no question about that. Flat. Gas. I don't know how fast he is. I don't know whether he's one of those guys who can tear it up over, 70, 80 meters. I don't know. He's definitely got the acceleration, that's for certain. And the footwork. But I'm going
And
to go.
Russell at 10 would have an absolute field day playing with him.
Yes. Little inside flicks off the on the blind side, yeah.
I'm afraid that on just the merit of what we've seen, Feyenoord-Wabosso is the bolter choice. I'm going to go with Lowe in this one, but I'd in a way I'd love to see Feyenoord-Wabosso in there, but I just haven't seen enough of him.
No, I kind of agree. Brendan, are you going low? Because if you are.
Sample size for Feyenoord-Wabosso is just a little bit too small. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he does make it, if he comes through like a train in the next 12 months. But James Lowe used to be flaky. Now, like Nick says, doesn't make a mistake. Everything he does is terrific. You'd be be a hard man not to pick him in the first test on current form. So yeah, I'll go with James Lowe.
My issue with both, and they're not almost not even issues. I don't think Lowe or Van der Merwe come to that are the greatest defensively on the turn.
Yeah, not a terrible argument. Were you going anywhere with that, or that was it?
That was it, really.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
I think that. I think that if the Wallabies, I don't know what's happening with the unpronounceable Wallaby wing. Is he pushing off to
He's
rugby league, or
he's
onto
pushed
rugby
off.
league?
He's
Yeah,
gone. Is he
yeah,
gone?
yeah. Which you're relieved about, Chewy, because it means you don't have to try and say his name anymore.
Well, that's true. Although, I was present on the day when one of our previous guests, Gareth Chilcott, was commentating or second voice on an England Georgia World Cup game where he didn't mention a single Georgian player
Georgia.
during the whole 80 minutes.
Georgia's easier. It either ends in Ashvili or Adza.
Yeah, I think it's the bits that precede Vili and Adza where Cooch was likely to have the problem. If he'd got as far as Vili and Adza, he would have been home free, wouldn't he?
Well, look, so Chewy, you've gone low.
Well, I'm still unclear after an hour or so. I'm still unclear whether the Lions are playing tomorrow or next year.
Yeah,
If they're playing next year, I've got I have Van der Merwe and Feyenoord-Wabosso because that's what I think will happen.
okay.
If they're playing tomorrow, I buy the argument of right sample size.
I don't see how we can, we're picking a team really for now, but for next year. But I mean, who knows what the hell is going to happen?
There is somebody we haven't mentioned today who will start the first test. So there always is. There's always somebody comes through.
Matthew Raynal.
Call him what you will. Bentos.
I thought you were about to name that man, Brent.
I thought it was a mysterious introduction to some big name that you're pulling out from the.
I was agog with excitement there, Brent, and it's not often I can say that in your connection. I was agog with excitement.
We have to leave you hanging on that one, boys.
Are we going to the bench?
Well, we're still not. I can just see if we pick Fehi Wabosso over James Lowe, we're picking someone who's played 110 minutes of Test rugby over someone who, like we say, didn't make a mistake in the Six Nations. I can just see the comments section already accusing us of English bias. So
the Ireland front row we've selected.
Because of that, I'm going to pick Fehi Wabosso because any publicity is good publicity. Sorry, Jim.
We need a bolter.
What does the panel say? I'm with Lowe. Brent's with Lowe.
I'm going with Lowe, yeah, still.
Oh, fine. All right. Sorry, Brendan. I thought you were going Fehi Wabosso.
No, I said I wouldn't be surprised if he gets the. But
fine.
Going with Lowe, but all it right. Wouldn't be a surprise.
He has a problem with Fehi Wabosso's sample.
Yeah, the sample. Yeah, he hasn't provided the sample. Typical bloody player, dehydrated.
guys, I'm almost hesitant to go into the bench because just in terms of recording time, I think we should at least pick our captain. And I've gone with Caelan Doris on the basis that presumably Peter O'Mahony is not going to play another or many, if not any, games for Ireland, and Doris will be made captain. Jack Morgan was my other one if he started because he's coming off my bench, but Doris is the front runner for me. What about you guys?
That's a good shout. Yes, I think that's a good shout.
I've advocated Chodgy as England captain for probably about not quite sure how many years now, certainly about four. So I'm not going to move off that. He is a decorated Test lion, so he would be mine. But I wouldn't, Doris is, Doris hasn't been there and done it yet, but he has for Ireland. So and he certainly doesn't set my teeth on edge. I'd be happy enough to look at his credentials for sure.
Chewy, I think unless there's a serious objection, we'll go with Doris, and then I'll read out the formal 15 that we've picked.
Silence.
Well, I don't, on the basis that I don't know anything about Doris as a captain. On the basis that, I mean, the sample size is too small. I mean, who knows? He might be a shocking captain.
Has he captained Leinster?
No, he skipped Ireland against Italy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that
the sample size?
About the same as Wabosso, really.
In fact, Fehi Wabosso has a bigger sample size than Caelan Doris in this respect.
You make a fair. All right. Well, then, who's your captain, Chewy?
Finn Russell.
Really?
Hmm.
Okay. Very interesting.
Keep it on him.
Yeah.
You want to
put a real target on his back.
That's a
there wasn't one already.
Yeah. And he's also in charge of the social side. every Lions tour has a social secretary, Finn Russell. Now he does have a big sample size. Allegedly, he does have a big. Allegedly, he has a big sample size on social affairs, and I think he's a man. No, I mean, I do actually think that there is. I don't think it will happen for a second, I should add. And I wouldn't be surprised if Itoje ends up as captain in this respect. I mean, Martin Johnson was picked above national captains in 97, was he not?
Yeah.
And that was a pretty good hit.
It'll be a real Andy Farrell choice. It has to be a close relationship with the gaffer, and he's got
well, it's Owen Farrell
days and England days, and he's got that with Doris. I think that they are the two. I'd be amazed if it was Finn Russell got.
As I said, I don't think it will happen. But I think there is a slightly perverse logic.
Oh yeah, you'd love to see it sort of
in saying to the perceived maverick, the off script guy, saying one of the ways to sort of corral this whole thing together is to say to the one bloke who's likely to go off script, you're in charge of the script, Finn.
Yeah.
This is the script, but you're in charge of activating it.
That's not just left field. That's in the bloody ether. I mean, unbelievable. You make the bloke who's meant to guide you to a bloody test victory on the field social secretary and your bloody captain. No.
What do you say? He's unlikely to go off the rails if you give the man responsibility. It's making the school bully the prefect theory of life, isn't it?
Okay, make him backs captain then.
He's captain of fly halves. Oh, how do you like these responsibilities? Do you think you could bear it, Finn?
Chewy, you've got Finn Russell. I'd say Chewy's Lions squad. Chewy's putting together the most fun Lions tour in history with Finn Russell as captain, leader, social sec legend. He's got
pilot.
He's got Alex Good at 15 and 12, and he's got Manu Tuilagi at 13.
What 13th on standby? You mean?
That's generous. Wow.
Well, yeah. Although in fairness to Manu, he played very well yesterday for Sale. Did play well. Best I've seen him play for a while, actually.
Yeah.
That was a compliment, Manu. Just
hey, look, you know, I mean, this is a generous-spirited podcast.
Well,
these are people with big hearts and big minds.
In the interest of that generosity, I'm going to quash your Russell captaincy suggestion at source.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's unlikely to happen. Nick, you've said Itoje. Brendan, yep. You've said Doris,
yeah.
Okay.
Casting vote.
Fucking co-captains. Yeah, well, I've gone Doris, but I hate being the casting vote, but I'm going to be.
I mean, that's the majority decision, so...
Yeah, I think in terms of where Doris will go, which is a year under the Ireland captaincy, and Andy Farrell, obviously, picking some.
And we're all Democrats here.
We are, very much so. Yeah. but imagine if he was
says the man who by diktat will have Russell in captaincy. Old Scargill himself.
I just put it out there. Don't talk to me about that halfway. He messed up the biggest opportunity for the working classes in a generation. I do not regard myself as a Scargillite. Believe me.
Okay.
So give us the team then, Ollie. I can't remember what
we
picked.
Well, we like to hear the team. So the team is, we've got Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan, Tadhg Furlong, Maro Itoje, Joe McCarthy in the row, Tadhg Byrne, Ben Earl, Caelan Doris at 6, 7 and 8, Jameson Gibson-Park, Finn Russell, Bundy Aki, Ollie Lawrence at 12 and 13, James Lowe on one wing, Van der Merwe on the other, and Hugo Keenan at fullback.
Wallabies 3-0.
Now you've read it out, it is an incredibly Irish squad.
Yeah.
Yes. It is.
I hadn't realised we'd gone quite that green, but if you're doing it on merit at the moment, that's kind of where logic leads you, isn't it?
You have to. I mean, so we've got zero Welsh, so apologies to all Welsh fans out there. Ireland, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh. We've got 10 Ireland. 3 Englands, Itoje, Earl, Lawrence.
Yeah.
And by extension,
all I would say is we had 10 Welsh in 2013 in the last test, and that didn't go badly.
No, it didn't. Yeah. 10 so 10 Ireland, 3 England, 2 Scotland is what we've got.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite something. So we'll leave you with that. Obviously, please have your say in the comments below, because it will be amazing to hear as many 15s as possible. I'm surprised that there hasn't been too much post Six Nations discussion about it yet, but maybe the dust is still settling. But we'll probably repeat this exercise after the Six Nations. So we'll be.
And let's hope we're all a year older and a year wiser, is all I can say.
Guys, we will. Yeah, thank you for doing that. I've got a bit of a headache now, to be honest. It's so much to think about when we're coordinating who picks what. But yeah, like we say, we've just picked a squad to go down under and lose 3-0 to the Wallabies.
Right.
So we'll look forward to that and see you next week.
Time for Mickey Steele-Bodger to get the brandy out now, boys.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Rugby Paper Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use and recommend the show to your friends. The Rugby Paper is available to buy every Sunday, and to make sure you don't miss it, subscribe through our print, digital and online options at therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions. That's therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions to get all our content for as little as 14p per day.